This is the Blaze Radio on demand.
When our water heater broke down last month, it was a nightmare. It took 5 hours for the plumber to show up, and he charged us a couple of $100 just to come out. Then it cost another $1,800 to put in the new water heater. By the time it was all said and done, I felt like I'd been taken. But what else could I do?
The smartest thing you can do is get a home warranty from American Residential Warranty. Their home warranties pay to repair or replace all your major appliances when they break. And they will break. And at the worst possible time, call American Residential Warranty right now for free information on home warranties starting at just pennies a day. Don't wait for your refrigerator to stop running or your ceiling fans to stop turning. Call American Residential Warranty right now. Ask how you can save up to 50% on washer and dryer coverage. Just call 1-800-686-3910. That's 1-800-686-3910. Again, 1-800-686-3910. Call now.
Prepare yourself to ingest current events, pop culture, and politics with a side of Latin flair.
Vaches. I don't have to show you any stinking vaches.
This is the Chris Salcedo Show on the Blaze Radio Network.
All righty, here we go. I have got so much stuff. I mean, sitting right here, just the guest list alone, the guest roster today on the Chris Salcedo Show will blow you away. Look at the preview. We're going to talk about man-made global warming. Your government has been lying to you. I know, shocker. Your government's been lying to you. Trying to push this narrative of man-made global warming. We'll talk with a guest about that. He's written a book, and I'll give you the story that came out this week about Noah cooking the books. Yeah, you do not want to miss this part of the show, and it's coming up here at the bottom of the hour, okay? Also coming up on the program, we will have a Democrat. That's right, a Democrat who actually I agree with. Mark it on your calendar, ladies and gentlemen. There are some issues at the border that you need to know about. It affects, well, the state that I'm broadcasting from in particular, but several other states around this country, as illegal immigration has now become a national problem, as Team Obama has taken in illegals and distributed them into every state in the union, according to the Associated Press. Also coming up with the program today, Congressman Mark Meadows, you might remember him as being the recipient of a smackdown from John Boehner and John Boehner's progressive GOP. When Mr. Meadows decided, you know, hey, I want to stand up and actually fulfill my obligation to my constituency. and that just won't do in today's modern GOP. No, it's go along to get along. Give Obama what he wants. That's the modern incarnation of the grand old party. So we'll talk to Congressman Meadows. And also coming up, Ruben Navarrete Jr., the man who helped me launch this program, 4 episodes, way back in 2013. He'll be on to talk about, and this might be a surprise, a shocker to many of you, but for the first time in American history, a Latino won the Iowa caucuses. Where's the Brian Williams press? Have you heard much about the historic nature of the first voting in the 2016 presidential campaign as a Latino takes, the first Latino to take Iowa? Don't hear much about that, do you? No, because you see, according to the Brian Williams press, Ted Cruz is the wrong type of Latino. He's not an extremist lib. That's why this program exists, folks, to dispel that notion that all Latinos are a bunch of left-wing nutcases. The Chris Salcedo Show, the antidote, if you will, to the Brian Williams press. 888-933-93, 888-900-3393. If you go to the online presence for the Chris Salcedo Show on the Blaze Radio Network, theblaze.com/radio, SiriusXM, Channel 796, the Blaze Radio smartphone app, or the iHeart Radio app, or if you want it on your schedule, on demand, as we call it, SoundCloud, iTunes, and Stitcher, that is for you to share and share alike. We have got a huge show, as I said. You know, let me start out on the trail. Some sounds from the trail, some sounds from the political narrative out there. We'll begin with the grand old party, the once conservative party. And Congressman Paul Ryan was out this week And I think, and look, I take heat every single time I say this, but I like Paul Ryan. I actually trust Paul Ryan. And you know what? In the Monday through Friday show in Houston and Dallas, every single time I say those words, I get hate mail. What is wrong with you? He's establishment, blah, blah, blah. I know, I get it. I get it. I just pray that my gut is properly informed, because I know the establishment that he's been part of, but I also know that he is just one man. So anyway, that's not going to stop me from taking issue with what he said this week. And also, perhaps, and I don't want to go on a limb here, but perhaps the establishment is getting word of how ticked off we are in the United States, the conservative movement, how just literally ticked off we are. And here he is trying to convince you and me, don't abandon the GOP, that same GOP that has abandoned us, we conservatives. He's pleading with us, don't do it now. Now, I got to ask you. I believe that Paul Ryan is earnest in his plea here, and he has a greater good in mind. Why are the other Republican Party members joining him in this plea? Because they want to keep, what, their cushy assignments, their chairmanships. If the Democrats get control of Congress, well, all that goes away. They get the smaller offices and all their perks go away. I really do believe that Paul Ryan has the best interest of the country at heart. I can't say the rest of his go along to get along membership, those individuals who voted yes for this omnibus bill, which is still, I am ticked off to this day. And you know why? Because President Obama continues to behave extra constitutionally. And now our elected leaders don't have a check. They've given up the power of the purse. We can't stop him. Even if they wanted to, the GOP, they couldn't stop him, because they've already funded it. They've already funded everything. So here's Paul Ryan on, it sounds like, on bended knee, talking to we conservatives. Hey, don't leave. Don't abandon us.
Look, we are all angry. We are all angry that the country is headed in the wrong direction. We're angry we're not doing what we need to do to defeat ISIS. We're angry that we have a porous border. We're angry that people aren't getting raises. We're angry that we've had 2% something growth for 10 years. We're angry that a debt crisis is on the horizon and we've done nothing to fix it.
Are you picking up a theme here? Angry, angry, angry. He is acknowledging that we're angry. But what Mr. Ryan has failed to do, and maybe politically he can't, but what he is failing to do is he's sitting there repeating stuff that we already know. Right? He has done an exemplary job of pointing out the obvious, why we're ticked off. But that was two election cycles ago. As to everything he just ticked off as to why we're angry, he needs to catch up. The reason why we're angry now is because the individuals that we placed there to stop all of this have not, and refuse to, as a matter of fact, and refuse to talk to go to school and to learn how to take their case to the Brian Williams press the way Trump has, to force them to get out our perspective, our view on the extra constitutional behavior of President Obama. More from Paul.
Because of a progressive president. So, yeah, we're angry. But the key here is take that anger and channel it constructively.
We did so. Paul Ryan, with all due respect, we did so. We took the anger over everything you just articulated, and we elected Republicans to the House of Representatives, historic elections. We took that anger that you're speaking out, and we block walked and we raised money and we put our faith in the grand old party. And we put them in power in the House. We have put them in power in state legislatures, in governorships, all over this country, up and down the ticket. And then we got angry again. And then we put them in charge of the United States Senate. We did what we were supposed to do. We channeled this anger and did what we did, our job. The Republican Party didn't. the leadership in the Republican Party, you didn't do your job. You cats are still under the impression that you're dealing with some normal Democrat. A Democrat who, by his party's own admission, he doesn't even check in with his own party. He doesn't even communicate with them. Now, look, expecting intellectual honesty or action from the Democrat Party in the best interest of the country is far too much to expect from them. They don't do that. They're in it for themselves. And we know this of the Democrat Party. Me, 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 me. What can government give me? What can government tax away from the producers and give to me? That's what the Democrat Party is all about. But the fact that you folks, you cats in the GOP, enable this childlike behavior, that's what really ticks us off.
Into action. Let's take it and harness it into action. And let's go out and give a positive message, a hopeful message, an optimistic and inspirational message to our fellow citizens in America to tell them that it doesn't have to be this way.
To what end? To what end? That was the message. Stop Obama in 10 and in 14. Stop Obama. The country was repulsed. Obamacare, life footprint, lead from behind, foreign policy, the status of the economy. And by the way, don't buy into this garbage you heard yesterday about the jobs numbers. Oh, 4.9% as people are not being counted anymore. That's the main driver of the unemployment number in this country is people not being counted anymore. They're not employed. They're not working. And don't forget, there are several of you out there within the sound of my voice who are doing 1, 2, 3 jobs. Part-time jobs. Guess what? Obama counts that as 3 jobs, but you're working all 3. Congratulations. Is that where we're going? He gets a bump up in median income one damn quarter, and everything's great. See? Obamanomics works. He gets one quarter of this, and all of a sudden the Brian Williams press is just singing his praises. It's amazing to me. The guy goes 7 years with the economy in the toilet, with median income in reverse, with part-time jobs being the call of the day, and he gets one good quarter, and then all of a sudden everybody's like, oh, it works. You've got to be kidding me. And folks, it's a house of cards. You look at the stock market lately, it's the folks who watch this and know what's really going on, they know what's up. They don't believe Obama for a second. We'll hear from more from the Republicans coming up. John Kasich had some interesting observations about what the presidency is. This is why I think that John Kasich is a buffoon. Back in a minute. The Chris Salcedo Show right here on The Blaze.
Broadcasting with Latin flair. This is The Chris Salcedo Show on The Blaze Radio Network.
When our water heater broke down last month, it was a nightmare. It took 5 hours for the plumber to show up, and he charged us a couple of $100 just to come out. Then it cost another $1,800 to put in the new water heater. By the time it was all said and done, I felt like I'd been taken. But what else could I do?
The smartest thing you can do is get a home warranty from American Residential Warranty. Their home warranties pay to repair or replace all your major appliances when they break. And they will break. And at the worst possible time, call American Residential Warranty right now for free information on home warranties starting at just pennies a day. Don't wait for your refrigerator to stop running or your ceiling fans to stop turning. Call American Residential Warranty right now. Ask how you can save up to 50% on washer and dryer coverage. Just call 1-800-686-3910. That's 1-800-686-3910. Again, 1-800-686-3910. Call now.
The Chris Salcedo Show.
Welcome back. Glad you made it. Telephone number if you want to reach out and say hi to the Salcedo Show. 888-933-93. We go to Minnesota. Have not heard from Dom in an awful long time. Hey, Dom. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, hey, Chris. How you doing?
Tippy-tappy with a song in my heart, sir. Glad you made it. What's going on?
I hope so, too. But, you know, I wasn't going to call. You're talking about Paul Ryan.
Yeah.
I want to trust the guy, but I'm not quite sure now that he's become speaker. He doesn't probably want to, rock the boat, and he wants to be part of the establishment. I'm not quite sure where he's at. I want to trust him, but I really quite don't know. And as far as, I don't know that he likes Donald Trump, but my sense of Donald Trump is that the pendulum has swung so far to the left the last 7 years. A lot of people, in spite of the fact that, he's going extra-constitutional and stuff like that, they wanted to see it so far to the right and maybe bring it back to the middle. I think that's what's
going on. Dom, you bring up a good point, and folks have observed about Donald Trump. First off, we've said on the show that if the Republican Party were halfway competent and halfway listening to their constituency, there would be no room for a Donald Trump candidacy, number one. There would be no Donald Trump ascendancy if the Republican Party were halfway committed to their constituents, number one. Number two, there is a fear out there, and it's very real, that there's a little bit of schadenfreude here, too, that a lot of conservatives say, well, you know what? Maybe what we need in this country is to have a Republican Obama who will run roughshod over the Constitution and will get these liberals to feel what we've been feeling these last 7 years, who will ignore the rule of law, who will ignore the limits on his power and authority, just as Obama has done, so that liberals can know how it feels. Problem is, Dom, we constitutional conservatives, we have more intellectual honesty than the liberal left does. And if Donald Trump becomes the nominee and ultimately becomes president and decides to behave out of the Constitution, I will oppose him, and I will oppose him mightily, because I believe in our country and that Constitution more than I do any singular man.
Yeah, but my fear is, do we have enough of us to kind of, I was reading somewhere that Ted Cruz memorized the Constitution. He was able to recite that without looking at it at the age of 13 or 14 or something like that. So I was like, wow, this guy is something else, and hopefully he'll be able to win. But I'm not quite sure we have enough conservatives to support him. That's my challenge, you know.
Oh, you mean the general election? I was just having this conversation, Dom, earlier this morning with some folks on the liberal left who have chosen John Kasich. They think John Kasich, of course, he is the weakest milquetoast of the Republican Party. And of course, the liberals find him acceptable, which means to me, reflexively, he's unacceptable. As far as general election, I will concede that Ted Cruz will have the toughest time. He still beats Hillary in a head to head, by the way, if it's Hillary Clinton, so the Democrat side is weak. You're either going to run against a socialist or somebody that's on the verge of being convicted of a felony. Ted Cruz will have a difficult time in his first run attracting those few who are left on the Democrat side who believe in national security, fiscal responsibility, and the Constitution of the United States. He will be able to make significant inroads with independents, and he will have a majority support from the Republicans. It's going to be a tougher road, but I think he can still do it. Rubio, I think, will have a much easier time. And Trump, oddly enough, Dom, he has support right now of 20% of Democrats, which is precisely what the GOP says they've always wanted, but they hate his guts. So first off, I appreciate the call. Great analysis on your part. And speaking of John Kasich, this is why I can't stand the man. here he is talking on Fox News Channel, and he's reacting to Donald Trump. He's reacting to Trump cursing. Did you guys see this? Trump dropped an F-bomb on the campaign trail. He was speaking in a crowd, kids in the audience. He drops the F-bomb. And so, of course, they want to stick microphones in the other candidate's face. Oh, what do you think about the cursing? What do you think about the cursing? And here comes John Kasich.
You don't want to just lose your temper. I mean, you're the president of the United States. You're the father of America.
You're the father of America. This is how John Kasich, a progressive Republican, a liberal Republican, looks at the presidency. I've got some news for you, Mr. Kasich. I'm not electing a daddy. I am not putting up somebody for nomination who I want to substitute for my daddy. That's what the freaking liberals do. They want somebody to take care of them, to tuck them in at night, to give them money, other people's money, to take care of them from cradle to grave. That's what liberals want. That's what extremist libs want. That's what lazy libs want. I'm not electing a daddy. What the hell's the matter with you? This, the father of America? Are you serious? I'm electing a president. I'm electing a leader. Someone who says, this is where we are going, and we are going to do it within the confines of the Constitution. I am going to persuade people to come along with me, and I am going to lead. That's what I'm not electing a daddy. I'm sorry, Mr. Kasich, but you're dead wrong if that's how you see the presidency.
President of the United States, you're the father of America. Act like it. And so for me, you know, it's about staying cool.
No, yeah, staying cool. I'm not electing a father, okay? A father tells me what to do when I'm a child, okay? And I am compliant and obey. I'm electing a president who does what I say. I'm electing leaders who reflect the will of we the people, and then will lead. The majority of the American people, Reagan said this, the American people, when given all the facts, will never make a bad decision. We haven't yet. Everybody's going to say, well, wait a minute, we elected Obama twice. Yeah, we, especially in 2012, we were told nothing but lies. Like your plan, keep your plan. Like your doctor, keep your doctor. Al-Qaeda's on the run. You guys remember this? None of it was true. It was all a bold-faced lie. And the Brian Williams press covered for him every step of the way. Now that the American people realize it was all a sham, they won't make the same mistake again. Oh, by the way, speaking of shams, your government's lying to you about man-made global warming. We're into that coming up next on The Salcedo Show. Stick with me.
The Chris Salcedo Show, part of Generation Blaze, only on the Blaze Radio Network. Chris Salcedo
is on the Blaze Radio Network.
Hey, welcome back to your Radio Republic. Unlike your current federal government, your views are heard, listened to, and addressed right here on this program, The Chris Salcedo Show, 888-933-93. Let me get to our first guest. His name's William Goodenough. He's the author of this book, The Three Concepts of Climate Change is AGW, that's Anthropomorphic Global Warming, Politics or Science. He's a technical analyst with decades of experience in scientific analysis of computer systems, control systems, pneumatic systems, power distribution systems, automated processes, and hydraulic systems. Basically, he holds a bachelor's degree in electric engineering, and he knows what he's doing. Mr. Goodenough, welcome to the Chris Salcedo Show here on The Blaze.
Well, good morning.
And to you as well, sir. Look, we don't see much published work from those who give voice to really the scam that man-made global warming is. I have long suspected, judging by the solutions put out by the progressive left, the reason why we have this perpetuation of this myth is that they seek to control. They seek us to voluntarily abandon our rights and our liberties and our money. And you actually pose some questions in this book that I hope you could address. Why does the greenhouse warming gang not want you to know? Well, what do they not want you to know about climate change? So what don't they want us to know?
They don't want us to know that, first of all, that Earth temperature is not changing in any peculiar way, and that CO2, it follows temperature changes on Earth. It doesn't follow individuals, and it doesn't follow a CO2 regimen.
You know, that's such a key component too, because I have seen scientific studies that don't get a lot of press and don't get a lot of airplay that say that it is the solar cycles, it is the wobble of the Earth that sets up the Earth to get heated, and then as the heat happens, it liberates more CO2 from the Earth's oceans, and that's what deals with that. That's what is the result of the rise of natural CO2 in our atmosphere. It's not the other way around, that man is releasing CO2, thus it creates warming. Is there starting to be more scientific consensus surrounding the former and not the latter?
First of all, what happens is when we get more heating from the sun, either the Earth becoming closer to the sun during an orbit, or the sun's actual change. The sun changes, and some years it puts out more energy than other years, and it does this in cycles. So we rather follow cycles. But what happens is, when there's more sun, then we get more melting snow that has been reflecting the sun, and the Earth itself, all the greenery of Earth, absorbs the sun. So we have a really effect at the CO2 follows temperature changes of the Earth.
Okay. William Goodenough is my guest right now. He is the author of The Three Concepts of Climate Change. Is AGW, anthropomorphic global warming, politics or science? Now, there's a story that came out this week, Mr. Goodenough. Approximately 300 people, including scientists, engineers like yourself, and other experts, about half with doctorate degrees, petitioned the United States House Science Committee Chairman Lamar Smith, the Republican from Texas, right where I'm broadcasting from, to carefully investigate suspiciously overheated climate temperature book cooking by NOAA, the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration. Let me give a list here. Of the signers of this letter, 25 were climate or atmospheric scientists, 23 were geologists, 51 were engineers like you, Mr. Goodenough, 74 physicists, and 12 economists. Their complaint is that NOAA, our government, is cooking the books on these temperature sensors around to basically advance this whole idea of man-made global warming. So in essence, the United States government is lying to us. So you ask this question, too, in your book. Why do they not want us to know what the reality is? So given that story that's just in this week, answer the question for us. Why don't they want us to know the truth?
What they are really doing is trying to get control, the political control of Earth's energy. And that energy we've been successfully using for years as inexpensive, good fuel. And that fuel stimulates our economies. It makes everything grow. And the political process felt they were not getting enough money out of it. So in taxes now, we come up with carbon credits. The carbon credits are due to cost us trillions of dollars before it's over.
Yeah. And again, at the end of the day, and this is why I suspect, Mr. Goodenough, that the agenda of the American left, actually the worldwide left, extremist liberals all over this globe, when you ask, okay, so you say that man is causing global warming, what's your solution? They say, taxes! Taxes! And that seems to be a big indication to me about what their agenda is. William Goodenough is my guest. Three concepts of climate change is AGW, politics or science. And I imagine that your solution as you explore in this book is that it's very much politics. Is that correct?
Yes. But the climate is changing for a totally different reason. It's a periodic change, magnetically forced.
Explain that.
Well, what happens is right now we have the magnetic North Pole that left Canada approximately 30 or 40 years ago, and it is going all the way to Russia. And that magnetic North Pole was drawing, it draws the cold air from the geophysical pole, and it drew it down to Canada. And that's all moving now to Russia. So our climate in the United States has to change to adapt to the new North Pole location.
Interesting. Well, okay. And so, I've never heard that theory before. That's fascinating. Okay, William Goodenough is his name. The book is The Three Concepts of Climate Change. Is AGW Politics or Science? I imagine, sir, that they can pick it up. They can pick it up from Barnes and Noble, Amazon, all the usual suspects.
Yes, everywhere.
All right, sir. Thanks for carving out time for the Salcedo Show this weekend on The Blaze.
Well, thank you for the time.
Pleasure was all mine, sir. Thank you very much. Let's get out to your calls right now here on the Chris Salcedo Show. If you want to weigh in on what you just heard or some other stuff we've talked about already so far, 888-933-93. We go to Alabama. Todd, hang on the line. Hey, Todd, welcome to the Salcedo Show.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, sir. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, I'm a Republican. And after you hear it so many times that it's real, is it real?
You're talking about global warming.
Yeah, it's just confusing.
Well, you know what? I think that global temperature change is real. I think climate change is real. I just don't think that men are causing it. I think that there are bigger forces other than our minuscule contribution to CO2 on this planet that is driving the weather. And I think that the science, once people look at the science, that's bearing it out. Now, you say, Todd, you're a Republican. I had an opportunity this week to examine the question with the Salcedo Show audience on the Monday through Friday shows to ask what it means to you to be a conservative. You identify as a Republican. Would you identify yourself as a Republican or a conservative?
Well, I mean, maybe it's, be honest, I think I'm going towards independent. It's like this, okay? I was in church and stuff, but I believe that, like a woman should, if they have a baby, should have the right to do what they do. But I believe that, it's Second Amendment and our gun rights. It's like I don't even know what I am anymore, for real.
Well, so you're saying you're pro-choice, and you and I differ on that. But you're also about preserving your right to defend yourself, which you and I are all about. And it's not that I'm not. It's not that I don't believe in a woman's right to choose. I just don't believe in giving a woman the power to take another life.
Yeah,
and I believe that little thing inside of the belly is an actual life. I have three children. I can actually attest to it. Go ahead.
16-year-old. I mean, I'm with you. I mean, after it's so long, in the woman's stomach, rape or incest. I mean, like that. But it's just. It's confusing, but...
Well, I appreciate the call, buddy. Thanks for calling in. Don't be a stranger here to the program. It's the Chris Salcedo Show, 888-933-93. Other side of the break, we will deal more with sounds from the campaign trail. Did you hear what Jeb Bush had to do this week? yeah. And then the Bernie Sanders crowd reacting to his almost victory, and some are saying it was a victory. It's just Mrs. Clinton's coin tosses, six in a row, she won, that tipped the scales. All will be made clear the other side of the break. The Salcedo Show here on The Blaze.
Telling the truth. It's one of those jobs American liberals won't do. That's why we need the liberty-loving Latino Chris Salcedo.
The Blaze Radio Network. Salcedo Show.
I have said this about the Bushes, Jeb included, a family dedicated to service. They've given a lot. They've made a lot of money in this country, and they've given back. They've tried to anyway. All that said, I think they're so kind they actually see the good in Democrats. They still think it's Tip O'Neill's party. They still think the Democrats in this country are pro-American, just having a different way of solving problems. And nothing could be further from the truth. They are woefully misinformed. Evidence of the Des Moines Register poll that we told you about here on the show last week and the week before, where 43%, a plurality of Democrats, self-identify as socialists. Once the voting was done in Iowa, nearly half of those Democrats supported the socialist, the self-avowed socialist candidate. So they either support or I self-identify as socialist to the tune of 43 to 50%. That's where the Democrat Party is. Socialism, by its definition, is anti-American. That's the current incarnation of the Democrat Party. And it's something that Jeb Bush refuses to acknowledge. Refuses! Oh, we gotta get along with these people. We got to, our problem is we don't work with Democrats enough. That's our problem. That's why his campaign is stuck in neutral. That's why John Kasich won't win. Jeb Bush was on the campaign trail. And you know, again, and even in this message, he tries to get fiery here in this soundbite. He's trying to really ramp it up, but his message, listen to the words. He's getting fiery about being passive. if that's even possible. I think that we should be aggressively passive. My words don't match with my tone, but it's precisely what you're hearing with Jeb Bush, and he's confusing the hell out of his audience. Have a listen.
So here's my pledge to you. I will be a commander-in-chief that will have the back of the military. I won't trash talk. I won't be a divider-in-chief or an agitator-in-chief. I won't be out there blowharding, talking a big game without backing it up. I think the next president needs to be a lot quieter, but send a signal that we're prepared to act in the national security interests of this country to get back in the business of creating a more peaceful world. Please clap.
Oh, man. I felt bad. I really felt bad for Jeb. The next president has to be quieter. Really? Really? There's a lot going on. You can't fix what's wrong by being quiet. And then when you have to prompt the audience to clap.
To be a lot quieter, but send a signal that we're prepared to act in the national security interests of this country to get back in the business of creating a more peaceful world. Please clap.
Wow. So we turn from the Republicans to the Democrats. And the night that Bernie Sanders nearly won the Iowa caucuses, Mrs. Clinton squeaked by. It was what, 0.2% separated them. And some are saying because Mrs. Clinton won 6 coin flips in a row. That's how they decide things in Democrat la-la land, folks. Democracy, we don't need a stinking democracy. Anyway, this was Bernie Sanders' headquarters and Mrs. Clinton saying that she's a progressive.
I am a progressive.
Da, 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 da. She's a liar. Da. That's Bernie Sanders' headquarters. She was on the big screen and they booed her. Folks, her own political party despises Hillary Clinton. They really do. The Dem debate. We'll get on that coming up next on the Chris Salcedo Show. The Blaze Radio Network. Happy to have you along, folks.
This is the Chris Salcedo Show.
Part of the next generation of talk radio.
This is the Blaze Radio Network.
Prepare yourself to ingest current events, pop culture, and politics with a side of Latin flair.
Vices. I don't have to show you any stinking vices.
This is the Chris Salcedo Show on the Blaze Radio Network.
Coming out of the program, I guess we can call this the Hour of the Democrats, because I've got a Democrat congressman coming on, to talk about something I agree with. We're going to start off the hour with Democrats and their debate. And no, I didn't watch the whole damn thing. I just, I couldn't. I really couldn't. I mean, can you imagine? We're going to get into this. Mrs. Clinton, blah, 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 blah. Listening to that for 4 years? Oy. Salcedo Show, hour two underway. 888-900-3393. That's 888-900-3393. Catching the show live. Easy to do. Blaze.com/radio. SiriusXM, channel 796. The Blaze Radio smartphone app and the iHeartRadio app. On-demand listening for you. SoundCloud, iTunes, and Stitcher. This is your Radio Republic. And I am your liberty-loving Latino. Not to be confused with those loudmouth leftist Latinos out there. I actually love the country. 888-900-3393, as I said, is one of the ways to contact the program. You can also go on Facebook, type in The Chris Salcedo Show, and you'll find us there. Also on Twitter, at Chris Salcedo TX, at C-H-R-I-S-S-A-L-C-E-D-O-T-X, as in Texas. All right, let's deal with the Democrat debate, shall we? And the Dems, look, they spent a lot of time arguing about who was the more left-wing nutcase. So, I mean, that's how constructive this was. And they spent a good deal of time centered around this quote from Mrs. Clinton. If it will play for me, go ahead.
You know, I get accused of being kind of moderate and center. I plead guilty.
Okay. She says she's a moderate. I've seen her call herself a liberal. I've seen her call herself a progressive, as we played just before the break there. Now, Bernie Sanders has been saying, look, you can't be all of those things. You can't be a liberal. You can't be a progressive. You can't be a moderate. Choose. Bernie says, I'm a socialist. You know, the almost full expression of what it means to be an extremist liberal. You know, just one step away from communism, from a communist. So he's calling her out and she's taking offense to it. He's saying, well, come on. Yeah, this is an attack line, blah, blah, blah. Well, he's saying, look, it wasn't me saying it. It was you saying it, Secretary Clinton.
This whole discussion began because I commented, not making an overall evaluation about the secretary. She was in Ohio, I think, in September or November. And she got up and said something like, I have been, I'm paraphrasing, I have been criticized because people think I'm a moderate. Well, I am a moderate. That's where this came from. It wasn't me paraphrasing her. It is what she said. And all that I said is nothing wrong with being a moderate. But you can't be a moderate. You can't be a progressive.
So, again, that was the whole, a vast, because it was MSNBS, by the way, hosting this debate. Rachel Maddow, an avowed leftist. And Chuck Todd, who is on the down low a leftist. So anyway, so they spent a lot of time on this idea. Who could be the most left-wing nutcase? And then they got into a little bit of substance. Now, Bernie Sanders, in a rare display of honesty with the American people, detailed for us the failures of Obamacare. He wasn't intending to, but he did. Now, remember, Bernie Sanders has been taking fire from Mrs. Clinton for wanting to get rid of Obamacare and go with full-tilt socialism, single-payer. What he calls Medicare for all. I want Medicare for all. Okay, whatever. But here he is being honest about what Obamacare has done to screw the country.
I am on the Health Education Labor Committee. That committee wrote the Affordable Care Act. The idea that I would dismantle health care in America while we're waiting to pass a Medicare for all is just not accurate. The Affordable Care Act has clearly, as Secretary Clinton made the point, done a lot of good things. But what it has not done is dealt with the fact that we have 29 million people today who have zero health insurance. We have even more who are underinsured with large deductibles and co-payments. And its prescription drug prices are off the wall.
It was a laundry list of how Obamacare has screwed this nation. By the way, Obama, let me be clear. The reason why I need Obamacare is because we got 30 million uninsured here. So pass Obamacare. We're going to shove it down your throat. So he says 30 million. Bernie Sanders says, yeah, we still got 29 million uninsured. Really, actually, it's closer to 33 million. So Obama uses as the excuse for Obamacare, 30 million uninsured Americans. And by the way, after Obamacare has been in place for 5 years, we still have 30 million uninsured. Because all it did was just shift cost. It shift winners and losers. The government picked winners and losers. They're still losers. Still losers on this thing. The vast majority of Americans got shafted to help out a Democrat political constituency. So, you know, some people are winning, some people are losing. It's just the government's picking now who does instead of the free marketplace. So they also talked about this idea of free speech as it relates to politics. The Democrat way is if you make a lot of money, you don't deserve free speech. You can't. You should be restricted as to how much money you could give to a political campaign. That's been the way they roll. And Hillary Clinton has been taking a lot of fire from Bernie Sanders that she is bought and paid for by corporate interests. And she really wasn't happy about that.
There is this attack that he is putting forth, which really comes down to, you know, anybody who ever took donations or speaking fees from any interest group has to be bought. And I just absolutely reject that, Senator. And I really don't think these kinds of attacks by insinuation are worthy of you. And enough is enough. If you've got something to say, say it directly. But you will not find that I ever changed a view or a vote because of any donation that I ever received.
What?
And I have stood up and I have represented my constituents to the best of my ability, and I'm very proud of that.
You know,
so I think it's time to end the very artful smear that you and your campaign have been carrying out in recent weeks. And let's talk about the issues. That divide us.
Let's talk about issues.
Agree with campaign finance reform.
Let's talk about issues.
I worked hard for McCain-Feingold. I want to reverse Citizens United.
Can you imagine listening to that crap for 4 years?
Let's talk about issues. All right, let's talk about why in the 1990s Wall Street got deregulated. Did it have anything to do with the fact that Wall Street spent billions of dollars on lobbying and campaign contributions? Well, some people might think, yeah, that had some influence. Let's ask why it is that we pay by far the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs, and your medicine can be doubled tomorrow, and there's nothing that the government can do to stop it.
Yeah, I'll say this about Bernie. He has correctly identified some problems here in the United States of America. We talked about this on last weekend's show. The Democrats, they give favors to their political cronies so that they're, you know, Planned Parenthood and all this to funnel money, taxpayer money back into their campaigns. Republicans do the same thing by funding weapon systems that don't need to be funded so that the defense companies can funnel money back into their campaigns. Same thing. It's all our money. And then they trade influence for it so they can have money in their campaigns. So and the same thing with the pharmaceutical companies and with oil or green energy companies. Same thing. So I agree with Bernie Sanders that there is a bit of an issue with crony capitalism in our country, a big issue with it. But the solution to this is to get people of integrity up there. If they start voting with the special interests over the interests of their constituents, then you vote them out. We have a problem in this country with 92% of these individuals being reelected and sent back up to Capitol Hill. We've got to pay more attention to that. An engaged electorate is a solution. Also, what he's talking about, you know, paying exorbitant fees and money for products, it's because his solution is government interference to put false caps on that market. The conservative solution is to create competition. Competition and more of that product. You create more product, you have demand, and you got a good thing going. Prices drop. It's like when those first flat screen TVs came out, right? Now, I couldn't afford it. Could you afford it? No, you couldn't. So the rich people bought them and they started getting more popular and they started getting more purchased. And as more were purchased, guess what? The companies made a profit. And what'd they do? They dropped the prices, right? That's called a free market. It works. It works. You know, I will say this about Bernie Sanders. I kind of like the guy. He's wrong on nearly everything as far as solutions are concerned. Kind of like Joe Biden, too. I said I like Joe Biden. I like Bernie Sanders. He had a funny moment in the debate.
You have almost a home state advantage here in New Hampshire. But back home across the border, you also have a long history of running against Democrats. as a third-party candidate for governor, for Senate, for Congress. In 1988, your candidacy as a third-party candidate arguably cost the Democrats a congressional seat and sent a Republican instead. How can you lead the Democratic Party nationally when you have not been a member of the Democratic Party until very recently?
Well, Rachel, actually, that wasn't accurate. In 1988, the Republican did win, I believe, by 3 points. I came in second. It was 34-31, I think 19 for the Democrat. In that race, the Democrat was the spoiler, not me. And it is true.
Very interesting. Bernie Sanders, you know, you got to love the old coot. But back in a minute on the Chris Salcedo Show, we'll deal with, well, how about this? Warning, Will Robinson, problems at the border. And I'm talking big time problems. The Salcedo Show continues next on The Blaze.
You're listening to The Chris Salcedo Show.
The Blaze Radio Network. Chris Salcedo Show on the Blaze Radio Network.
Guess what? President Obama is cutting back border surveillance down the Mexico-Texas border. Yeah, great timing on his part. Let me have a conversation with Congressman Henry Cuellar. He serves the 28th District. He's a Democrat in the great state of Texas where I'm broadcasting from. Total of 5 advanced degrees Mr. Congressman Cuellar has, and he's the most degreed member serving in the House. 6th term as a Democrat, serving the powerful House Committee on Appropriations, the committee in charge of overseeing the federal budget. Mr. Cuellar, welcome to the Salcedo Show.
Thank you so much. How are you?
Doing well, sir. Thank you for being here. Look, the Texas Tribune talked about you and Greg Abbott teaming up, and I think it's fair to say you were befuddled by the Obama administration's announcement that they were cutting back aerial surveillance on the southern border in Texas, Texas-Mexico border, by 50%, according to the reporting in the Texas Tribune. First off, will you lay out the problem as you see it, sir, and why you felt compelled to team up with the governor to address this problem?
Right. First of all, I sit on the Appropriations Committee that deals with Homeland, so we do their budget. I'm familiar with their budget, number one. Number two, I represent a large part of the border in South Texas. And number three, I do understand that our men and women from Border Patrol and other agencies on the ground do a very good job. And one of the ways we can support them is to provide aerial support, which means that it either comes from the what we call the Marine and Air, the Air Marine part of Homeland, or it comes from the National Guard. In this case, we're talking about National Guard that will be flying. And then when they see a suspicious activity, they'll radio that down to Border Patrol. Then Border Patrol can go after that particular area. So it works very, very well in hand. We appropriated money for Homeland to use this aerial support. For some reason, they decided to cut it in half, and it just doesn't make sense. In fact, I just got out. I just got the latest numbers. Just on the unaccompanied kids and and the folks coming in. If you look at it from last year, from October 1st to January 31st of 2015 and 2016, compared to the same one the year before, it's gone up by 171%. So when they're saying that there's less apprehensions, I just don't see it. And this is only just people coming in without papers. We're looking at also, what about the drugs? There are billions of dollars of drugs that come in every year into the United States from Mexico, whether it's cocaine or other drugs comes in. So if we can provide the aerial support, then let's help the men and women on the ground that are doing their job by providing this surveillance, this intelligence that we can provide them, and it only makes sense. So money has been appropriated. It's not an issue of money.
Congressman Henry Cuellar is my guest right now. He serves the 28th Congressional District here in Texas. He is a Democrat, part of the Blue Dog Democrat Coalition. Let's talk a little bit about the 900-pound gorilla in the room, which is the threat of international terrorism. And how concerned are you that it seems this posture on our border is being, we're seeing a stand down here with a reduction of 50% surveillance. it doesn't make sense to me, and maybe it doesn't to you as well, that we'd be cutting our surveillance by 50% in an era where international terrorism and ISIS is gunning for the United States. How do we square that circle?
Well, you know, and just in general, border security, we got to make sure that we stop anybody that has an evil motive that wants to come to the United States. On terrorism, you know, quite honestly, that's a different issue that we have to look at, and we got to make sure that we address that correctly. Is there a potential that terrorism can come through our southern border? Yes. Have there been any documented cases? The answer is no, but it could always happen, and therefore we have to be ready. So whether we have intelligence on the ground or intelligence, the surveillance on the air, we have to provide that intelligence. And Chris, you said one thing that's very important when it comes to terrorism. You know, we have to be correct and stop them every single time. All they have to do is get it right one time. With that one time, they can hurt us. They can plant the bomb. They can do something to us. So we have to be, we have to get it right every single time. All they have to do is get it right just one time. And therefore, we cannot let our guard down. And this is why, this is one of the reasons why I'm saying, and this is not a Democratic or a Republican issue. And, you know, I'm glad that I'm working with Governor Abbott on this. Bipartisanship is always good. It's always good. And we're working on this because all we're trying to do is ask questions. Why are you cutting down the aerial support when the funding has been there? What do you see at the border? And remember, I live in the border. I've always lived in the border. I drink the water. I breathe the air there. My family lives there. I understand the border very well. And again, as a law enforcement, law and order person, I just want to make sure that we provide the right balance of security on the border.
I got about 60 seconds here, Congressman, and I know it's probably going to be a little more involved than 60 seconds worth, but give it your best shot. Where do we go from here? How are you planning to take this fight to make sure that surveillance is restored to the degree that it was at the very least? Where do we go from here?
Well, you know, certainly the appropriation process, and I do sit on the Homeland Appropriation Subcommittee. I certainly will be asking the questions. I'm hoping that they give us the courteousness of responding to the governor and my letter by giving us information. You know, right now we want to get the information. Maybe they know something that we don't know about, but, I work in Washington, but I live on the border, and I'm very familiar with the border.
All right, Congressman Henry Cuellar, everybody, this should be, as the congressman said, a bipartisan issue. National security should not be a partisan issue. And as evidenced by the Texas Tribune wrote this up, Greg Abbott, the governor of this state, and Congressman Henry Cuellar, serving the 28th Congressional District, a Democrat, teaming up together. Let's pray that the right thing is done here. Congressman, will you do me a favor and just keep in touch with the program and let us know your progress and anything we can do to help you out in this endeavor, because it's something we support you and the governor in doing.
Thank you so much, Chris, and it's a pleasure talking to you.
All right. Now, coming up on the other side of the break, there is more. There is more going on at the border. A story that I can't believe I'm going to have to convey to you. Barack Obama, not only is he cutting back surveillance on the border, but he has undertaken a policy to where all you have to do if you're an illegal immigrant coming into this country is to say to the Border Patrol, you're caught. You say to the Border Patrol, look, I've been here since 2014 and I don't have any felonies. And then that individual will be let loose on the streets, not of Mexico. No. They'll be let loose on the streets of America. This is the current policy being implemented by President Obama in his final year. What I say to everybody here in America is you better damn well get used to it, because Mr. Obama is going to do more of this. If only we had a Republican Party to stop him. We'll talk to a Republican next.
The Chris Salcedo Show will be right back.
The Blaze Radio Network.
This is the Chris Salcedo Show, only on the Blaze Radio Network.
If you're an undocumented immigrant picked up by the Border Patrol, all you have to do to be let loose is say you don't have any felony convictions and say you've been in the States since January 2014. That's it, according to the president of the National Border Patrol Council. That is the new policy officers along the southwest border are apparently using after realizing that most border crossers given a notice to appear in court don't show up.
Immigration laws today appear to be mere suggestions. There are little to no consequences for breaking the laws, and that fact is well known in other countries. If government agencies like DHS or CBP are allowed to bypass Congress by legislating through policy, we might as well abolish our immigration laws altogether.
That was Fox News Channel detailing another twist in our southern border. We just got through talking to you about with Congressman Henry Cuellar about how the Obama administration has seen fit to cut back aerial surveillance by 50%. That has Democrats in Texas a little on edge, has the Republican governor of Texas a little on edge. And now we've come to find out that Team Obama has set a policy of basically catch and release on the southern border. If only there were a political party out there that could actually oppose Barack Obama and actually utilize their constitutional authority to stop Barack Obama. Let's talk about this prospect with my next guest, Congressman Mark Meadows. He's a constitutional conservative representing North Carolina's 11th district, serves on the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, where he chairs the Subcommittee on Government Operations overseeing the federal agencies and the executive office of the president. Elected in 2012, Mr. Meadows previously spent more than 20 years as a small business owner. Congressman, welcome back to the Chris Salcedo Show.
Chris, it's great to be with you. Thanks so much. And you're right. It's time we get some spine.
I know. You know, you fought, you've tried to stand up and you tried to fight the overreach, the violation of the Constitution and the excessive use of power that Mr. Obama doesn't have by the executive branch. And you were slapped down by, in my view, linguine-spined Republicans for doing so. Would you comment on the border issue now as you're hearing Border Patrol representatives come out and say, this is our policy. We're just going to catch them and release them.
Well, what we're finding is this is consistent with the administration's agenda, which is to say that there's a law there, but we're going to look the other way. We're going to change it. And for far too long, he's been able to get away with it. And we just keep going on with business as usual. So not only is it the power of the purse, but honestly, what we've got to do is start applying the heat in a number of other areas. This newest revelation that you just played for all the listeners there is really something that not only hearings have to highlight, but you have to bring in the actual people making the decisions. And so, and to show why it goes against the rule of law. But for far too long, we seem to turn a blind eye and just allow the administration. And that's why it's so critical to change, the person at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Yeah, you made a very good point there, because this isn't the first time that a man I call Resident Obama has gone extra constitutional. This isn't the first time he's abused his power. And if everybody thought that the previous 7 years were bad, wait till you see what he's got in store for his last year. This won't be the last time he decides to go around members of Congress, your elected representative. And Congressman Meadows is precisely correct on this. So let me ask you, Congressman, because I have been beside myself about those who, and by the way, how did you vote for the omnibus, sir?
I voted against it. I mean, I just couldn't see in good conscience to vote for it. It went against not only what I believe, but I think the vast majority of Americans believe that it was going the wrong direction as well.
Well, God bless you for that. And I have reasoned that. So here's Barack Obama doing what many would consider to be beyond his scope and authority by basically instituting catch and release. And if we had a Republican Party that was at all interested in using its constitutional check on this president, then they would not have funded his government with discretionary spending until September, and then with other spending and funding all of his agencies beyond that into 2017 with this omnibus bill. But that's precisely what they did. And now, not only can our Republicans not stop Barack Obama, or they don't seem interested in stopping Barack Obama, they don't have the ability to stop him, and that's the biggest misery, sir.
Well, and your analysis is spot on. Truly, what you've got there is looking at if we continue to send the checks, they're going to continue to really manage the process the way they always have. And that's a consistent thing that truly where we've got to go with this is start to defund some of these agencies that are not fulfilling the responsibility of the law. You know, and they say, well, they have discretion. Really, it's critical that we define in Congress what we want to see and what we don't want to see and quit giving the White House, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat there, latitude to implement it the way they see fit. That's why, you know, in terms of presidential candidates, you really have to look at who is willing to restore the balance of power. And if they're not, then they don't deserve your vote, whether they are a Republican or a Democrat.
Speaking of votes, Congressman Mark Meadows, my guest right now. He is North Carolina's, rather, 11th congressional district, the representative there. My big, before I get back to more policies here, let me just talk with you about messaging. And the I've told this story on the air before, but I don't think I've ever shared it with you. After the 2012 loss, me and a couple of other folks in opinion radio, I was doing news at the time, but I was dipping my toe into opinion. And we had reached out after Mitt Romney's catastrophic loss to Barack Obama in 2012 and reached out to the Republican National Committee and others and said, look, you have the superior product. You guys just aren't there standing up for it. You're not getting out and taking your message to the American people. You're not bypassing the Brian Williams press, or you're not utilizing it to great effect. I was told, don't call us, we'll call you. And then here comes Donald Trump, sir. And Donald Trump, say what you want to about him, and whether you trust him and he's a real conservative or not, he is a master at manipulating the Brian Williams press. And I will put this to you, sir, that is by far one of the biggest deficiencies this Republican Party has. They do not know how to get their message out, and they don't seem at all interested in learning. All they seem doing is decrying those who do understand how to get the message out. Why do you think this is?
Well, I think part of it is they're afraid to offend part of the group that they believe will ultimately vote for him. But it's been said over and over again, reading a book on Margaret Thatcher, and she says, you know, given the indication of voting for a socialist or voting for someone who acts like a socialist, people will vote for the real deal every time. And that's essentially what we're doing, is we're actually saying that we're conservatives and we're going to adhere to the Constitution. We're going to go ahead and support that. And yet we moderate to the middle each and every time. And you're right, whether it's Donald Trump or Ted Cruz, they've both been very clear in where they are. And we've got to make sure that that conservative solution for really restoring the power is not only articulated, but certainly supported with appropriations bills and with legislation. And moderation in terms of going to the center does not really get you any more votes. Romney is a prime example of that. But we do a very poor job of messaging on any of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, liberals never have to apologize for going full tilt bozo liberal extremist. Barack Obama is an example of that. Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, the self-avowed socialist. But all of these Republicans, the majority of what I call the establishment, they're constantly apologizing for conservatism, and it really befuddles me. Congressman Mark Meadows, my guest right now, 11th District in North Carolina. And to that end, here comes Barack Obama proposing $10 tax on a barrel of oil just after the Republicans said, hey, you know what, this was all part of this omnibus bill. It's why we all voted, because now we can export oil. Well, congratulations on that. Now here comes the administration wanting to tag on $10 a barrel to advance green energy, I guess is what the initiative here. I know it's not going to go anywhere, but still, he never has to apologize for that. And it doesn't seem anybody on the GOP side is making an effective case against it.
Well, he understands who his base is, and so he's able to talk about those kind of things, get applause, and then we somehow have to take a politically correct answer and respond to it. You know, it's interesting. They want subsidies for solar, wind, and other types of sustainable energy, because by giving subsidies, you get more of it. by taxing things, you get less of that too. And Barack Obama at least knows that. We should know that and stand up. I can tell you, it's a non-starter. You're right. It's a non-starter. We're not going to go there with it, Chris. But the other problem is we've got to come up with an agenda that the American people will say, well, at least I know what they're for and they're consistent with that. I may not agree with all of their plan, but certainly I agree with 90% of it. And yet we do a very poor job of articulating that.
Last question or a bit of analysis here, Congressman. I'm going to ask you to put your political analysis hat on if I can. You've got the Republican Party and its establishment it personified through Mitch McConnell or John Boehner or John McCain or Lindsey Graham. They're always on about, man, we need to grow the party. We need to show how much outreach we can do, for example, as your liberty-loving Latino here, to Hispanics. I mean, you would think they would want to appeal to somebody like me. And then you get Ted Cruz, the first Latino, to win the Iowa caucuses in U.S. history, and nobody really gives a darn. Then you've got Donald Trump, who, by the polling, is appealing to a wide swath, for a Republican anyway, 20% of Democrats, according to polling, and bringing in disparate groups to support his campaign, and the establishment can't stand him. What in your mind is with this double messaging? They can't seem to get their story straight in establishment Republican land.
Well, here's the issue, and it gets the bottom line. It's all about control. When you allow the people, whether it be swing Democrats or Latinos or whomever, to come in and actually support a candidate, and you support those candidates and they actually become the nominee, you lose control because the power is really with the people instead of with the establishment. The biggest danger that the establishment has right now is with a Donald Trump or a Ted Cruz nomination, because they know that ultimately it would be the people controlling and not K Street and special interests. And so that's really what it's about. It's not about reaching out to a certain group. It's about maintaining their power in Washington, D.C.
Congressman Mark Meadows, he's the congressman representing the 11th district in the great state of North Carolina. Sir, don't be a stranger here on the Chris Salcedo Show. You're welcome back anytime.
I'll come back. Thanks, Chris. It's been a pleasure to be back with you.
Pleasure was all mine, sir. Thank you very much. Back in a minute, everybody, on the Salcedo Show. Don't go anywhere.
The Chris Salcedo Show on the Blaze Radio Network.
You're listening to the Latino conservative, Chris Salcedo, on the Blaze Radio Network.
I want you to think about that, folks. Everybody from the sound of my voice, how many of you support the Border Patrol asking the illegal immigrant, hey, how long you been here? Oh, 2014. You got any felonies? No felonies. And just letting them loose. How many of you support that? How many of you are going to pick up the phone and call up your congressman, I don't care whether they're Democrat or Republican, and say, what the hell are you going to do about it? And when they say, well, we're really angry. Well, great. What are you going to do about it? Yeah, we're really angry. We're ticked off at this. This is Obama just acting lawlessly. Yeah, what are you going to do about it?
Nothing.
Because they can't do anything about it. You see, because the Republican Party, the Democrat Party doesn't have any interest, with the exception of Congressman Cuellar, who lives in that backyard. But most of the Democrats around this country could give a darn. Had to clean that up. But yeah, and the Republicans, they can't do anything. They've surrendered their power. They've surrendered their ability to defend you against Barack Obama's anti-American policies, his lawless policies. In particular, if you have a Republican congressman in your district who voted for this omnibus bill, you might want to point that out. Gee, it would be nice if my elected representative had the power to go and stop this kind of noise. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick of the state of Texas weighing in on Barack Obama cutting back aerial surveillance by 50%.
It's outrageous, quite frankly, that at a time when we're seeing a spike again
in border crossings if the government's going to cut down the air surveillance. The good news is we campaigned and said when I ran for lieutenant governor, we said we would spend $800 million, which is almost triple what we spent, about 2.5 times in any year in the past on border security on our end. So we have more air assets than we've had in the past ever. We're going to have to do the job that the federal government's not doing to do the best that we can to help secure the border. But we need a partner in the White House. At the end of the day, we need another 15 to 20,000 Border Patrol, and they need to be able to do their job. We need air assets. We need technology. We've added cameras over the border. We've added boats on the river. We've added planes in the sky. Texas taxpayers should not be on the hook for that.
Yeah, so then there's that, and then there's this.
On ABC, the Anybody But Carly Network, the Republican presidential debate. Tune in as we exclude Carly Fiorina, but include people she beat. On Anybody But Carly, we rig the game. She's rising in the polls, beat Kasich and Christie in Iowa, tied with Bush in delegates. And unlike all of them, she has actually won debates before, taking it to Hillary Clinton like nobody else can. But on Disney's ABC, we've frozen Carly out, turned the debate inside out. All part of our Mickey Mouse operation.
That's the Carly campaign. I'm really upset with ABC not allowing her into the debate. She's right. She's been great in all these debates. I'm not sure why ABC wants to exclude the only GOP woman.
This is the Chris Salcedo Show on the Blaze Radio Network.
Prepare yourself to ingest current events, pop culture, and politics with a side of Latin flair.
Vices. I don't have to show you any stinking vices.
This is the Chris Salcedo Show on the Blaze Radio Network.
All right, here we are, hour three of the Chris Salcedo Show. Glad you've tuned in, everybody. Coming up, Obama in the mosque. It's not like Chico and the Man. It's not like Benny and the Jets. It's Obama in the mosque. We'll get to that. Coming up, and my buddy Ruben Navarrete Jr. will be on to discuss this this idea that the first Hispanic in U.S. history has won the Iowa caucuses, and the Brian Williams press, don't care. Ted Cruz isn't the right kind of Latino because, you know, there's a measuring stick. You have to prove to the Brian Williams press that you're worthy of their praise by being an extremist lib before they acknowledge your accomplishments. And to be fair, Mrs. Clinton, the first woman to win the Iowa caucuses as well. All right, before we get to all of that, let's get out to our weekly visit with the one, the only Mary Ramirez, who is hanging on the line right now. This is our weekly visit. She's a longtime contributor to the Salcedo Show and has a weekly offering that she likes to impart to you via the Blaze.com in the contributor section. Mary, welcome back.
Hey, Chris. And you know what? Before I get to this week's piece, I just wanted to comment on something you just said about the Brian Williams press and ignoring the fact that the first Hispanic won the Iowa caucuses. I think it was Lindsey Graham this last week that said, we needed Jeb Bush because we need the Hispanic vote. And I'm sitting there going, hello? we have two Hispanics in the race, one of whom just won the Iowa caucuses. Hello?
Yeah, well, Lindsey Graham is one of these guys who assumes that you have to be friendly to illegal immigration to get the Hispanic vote. And it shows you how little regard he has for liberty-loving Latinos out there who believe in the Constitution of the United States, who believe in the law, the rule of law here in the United States. It shows you how depraved that wing of the Republican Party is, who has accepted the Democrat way of looking at things, that if it's illegal, it must be Latino. And that's the way the libs... No, seriously, that's how they think. When they talk about illegal immigration, who are they talking about? And that's a legal status. They think, we're talking about Hispanics here, as if all of us believe in violating the law. And nothing could be further from the truth, but the Lindsey Grahams and the John McCains, they've bought into this Democrat way of looking at us. And I just can't sign on. So what's the topic this week?
Sure, Chris. So I got to thinking about millennials this week and the fact that I include myself as a millennial, we're the largest generation ever, even bigger than the baby boomers. There's like 95 million of us, which means that the decisions we make, especially, you know, in this election, are going to have more impact than any other generation before us. And so I thought about the fact that Bernie Sanders has a pretty massive swath of support from millennials. And I was having a discussion with someone this morning, a millennial this morning on Facebook. And as I was saying, you know, I get it. We are coming of age at a pretty difficult time. Our economic future looks bleak. We're more divided than ever as a nation. So it makes sense that, you know, we're thirsty for a message, for an answer to the fact that we've had to move back in with mom and dad, for an answer to the fact that our pay doesn't go very far, and so on and so forth. And so Bernie Sanders, his message sounds pretty good. It's free, sounds amazing. And, you know, you and I know, of course, that free is never actually free. But what I'm trying to do with this article is to get millennials to think about just what they're going to have to give up, continue to give up, actually, if we continue down this progressive redistributive track. And, you know, think about it. We young people all wanted to get out from under the thumbs of our parents' authority, right? That's the first thing we all wanted to do. We get the car keys and, you know, let's go, right? And now we're saying that we want to be under the thumb of an even bigger authority, the federal government. And the thing is, there is an alternative. And as I was listening to Senator Ben Sasse, I'm sure you heard this, so brilliantly sum up conservatism the other day, in 90 seconds, I think it was, it dawned on me. We don't explain the basics of constitutional conservatism to our young people. We talk about what we want to curtail, so big government, progressive taxes, socialized medicine, and so forth. But not everyone, not all of us talk enough about, you know, what young people need to hear about why constitutional conservatism is the way to truly be free. So that's the key message of this piece, Chris, is to really get young people to stop and think about, listen, if you didn't like your parents' authority because you wanted to go out and live on your own, you're certainly not going to like the federal government's authority, because quite frankly, when the government promises you everything and sets out to give you everything, you are as free as they decide you are at that given point in time.
Nothing is free.
I'm trying to get my genitals.
Nothing is free. This whole idea of free college, somebody's going to be paying for it, folks, and you're going to have to surrender something to get it. There is no such thing as free, and these millennials have not been taught that message, either by poor parenting or by a government-run education system. But by the way, Mary, you mentioned Ben Sasse. Now,
yeah.
I have this soundbite. It actually spurred, in the Monday through Friday Salcedo shows, an entire set of shows about what it is, what you think conservatism is. And now he's using this as a mechanism to bash Trump. So I'm not doing that. What I am saying is that I completely agree with him on his take on conservatism. Listen to this, Mary. Here's the soundbite that you were referencing.
America is the most exceptional nation in the history of the world because the U.S. Constitution is the best political document that's ever been written, because it says something different than almost any people and any government has believed in human history. Most governments in the past said might makes right and the king has all the power and the people are dependent subjects. And the American founders said no. God gives us rights by nature and government is just our shared project to secure those rights.
And it is that is another way of saying how we end this show every single weekend, which is, remember, a society's worth isn't measured by how much power is seized by its government, but rather how much power is reserved for its people. Is that fundamental understanding?
Exactly right.
That your rights are God-given and that the United States is unique as the only government that wrote its constitution to preserve those rights. That's government's job, not giving you stuff.
Right. Well, and think about it, though, Chris. We are becoming, as a nation, we are becoming more and more godless. And I say that openly. We really are. We are becoming more and more godless. And if as a nation we don't believe our rights come from God, then where do they have to come from? Well, our government, right? So,
well,
I mean, I know that there's that factor in there as well, that, you know, if young people no longer believe our rights come from God, automatically they're going to believe that they have to come from government. Where else would
they
come
from? Look at what's going on over in Europe. I mean, 10% of that population over in Europe goes to church, and they've been on the downhill slide. We've been protecting their worthless behinds for so many years because they don't believe in defending themselves. They've relied on the conservative nation, the United States of America, to defend them from all the bad guys around the world. And then here comes Barack Obama dismantling all of that, and all of a sudden Europe is like, oh my gosh, we got to defend ourselves. And they're losing badly. They're losing badly. So, hey, Mary, let me know the name of the piece, please.
Sure, Chris. It's 5 Things Millennials Should Understand About Constitutional Conservatism, and it's in the contributor section of theblaze.com.
God love you, lady. Appreciate the visit, as always. Mary Ramirez, everybody, head of theblaze.com, the contributor section, and check out the latest offering. You millennials out there, and if you're parents of a millennial, get them to read this piece. They will be better for it. Obama visited a mosque. Oh, yeah, he did. He did. Obama in the mosque. Like I said, Benny and the Jets. No. Here are some of the things he had to say.
Now, a lot of Americans have never visited a mosque. And to the folks watching this today who haven't, think of your own church or synagogue or temple. And a mosque like this will be very familiar.
He had a lot more to say, a lot of praise for Islam. And you know what? I don't necessarily have a problem with it. I really don't. If you want to praise a religion, that's all well and good. I'm going to let you hear more of this, and I'm going to remind you about what Mr. Obama has to say about other religions out there. Coming up on the Salcedo Show, right here on The Blaze.
This is The Chris Salcedo Show, The Blaze Radio Network. Chris Salcedo Show. Conservative talk radio with spice.
Now, a lot of Americans have never visited a mosque. And to the folks watching this today who haven't, think of your own church or synagogue or temple. And a mosque like this will be very familiar. This is where families come to worship and express their love for God and for each other.
That's Barack Obama.
Come here to meet candidates.
Yeah, can't meet candidates. Yeah, sure. That's Barack Obama visiting the mosque this week. And all well and good. You're not going to hear me bash him for visiting a mosque and praising a religion. As a matter of fact, I find it refreshing that an extremist lib like Barack Obama is actually finding a religion to praise.
As one of your members said, just look at the way we live. We are true Americans. So the first thing I want to say is two words that Muslim Americans don't hear often enough, and that is thank you.
Wow. He's really laying it on thick. And, you know, it was Bill Maher last week who said that he wishes liberals were as tough on Islam as they are in Christianity. But here's Barack Obama. Maybe he's striking out a new tone. Here is an extremist left winger, Barack Obama, praising religion.
Thank you for serving your community. Thank you for lifting up the lives of your neighbors.
Thank you.
And for helping keep us strong and united as one American family.
Wow.
We are grateful for that.
Muslims did all that. Did you know that? Muslims were responsible for keeping our communities together, keeping America together.
And since 9/11, but more recently since the attacks in Paris and San Bernardino, you've seen too often people conflating the horrific acts of terrorism with the beliefs of an entire faith. And of course, recently we've heard inexcusable political rhetoric against Muslim Americans.
Well, that's an out-and-out lie, but that's what Obama does. He's talking about Trump, of course. And Trump was talking about stopping Muslims from coming into the country until we get this vetting process worked out, until we can actually get a responsible government in place. I said I don't see the need to discriminate against people in their faith. I think we should stop all immigration into the United States until you know the elected leaders up on Capitol Hill do some work for a living. Done. Stop it. There's no need to discriminate. Just stop all of it, because the American people are what's important, not other people from other nations. And if we can't properly vet them, or we don't know who's coming in, or we don't have proper control over our borders, it is the American people who need to be put first. I don't care if you're a dang Republican or a Democrat or whatever you call yourself. So, Mr. Obama there is of course, lying. Donald Trump was talking about folks who are not American Muslims. By definition, those who want to come into America. That's who Trump was talking about. So there's Mr. Obama conflating, as he usually does. He had more to say about Islam.
We have to understand, an attack on one faith is an attack on all our faiths. And And when any religious group is targeted, we all have a responsibility to speak up.
Indeed. Well, you know what? Obama, this whole idea, if one religion is attacked, then they all are attacked. And we all should unite against the person who is doing the attacking, right? Isn't that right, Barack Obama?
Humanity has been grappling with these questions throughout human history. And lest we get on our high horse and think this is unique to some other place, remember that during the Crusades and the Inquisition, people committed terrible deeds in the name of Christ. In our home country, slavery and Jim Crow all too often was justified
in the name of Christ.
Oh, man, an attack on Christianity. Wait a minute. What do you think about that, Barack Obama?
We have to understand, an attack on one faith is an attack on all our faiths.
Ah, okay, I got you. Crusades, by the way, folks, historical facts, something Obama, well, if he doesn't know, he should know. 400 years of attacks by Muslims on Christian lands. The Crusades were a response, a very late response. Tremendous amount of restraint shown by the Christians way back in the day of the Crusades. It was a response. History proves that out, ladies and gentlemen. The Jim Crow thing, it's complete rubbish. Complete rubbish. Nobody who was a Christian believed that Jim Crow laws represented Christianity whatsoever. Anybody that was sane. But then there's Mr. Obama attacking Christianity. I'm sure it's the only time he's ever attacked Christianity.
As a Christian, I am supposed to love. And I have to say that sometimes when I listen to less than loving expressions by Christians, I get concerned.
Yeah, I get concerned. Yeah, do you get concerned when less than loving Muslims kill in the name of their faith, Mr. Obama? And do you identify them, sir? Do you identify them, sir? Well, that sounds to me like an attack on only on Christianity, Mr. Obama.
We have to understand, an attack on one faith is an attack on all our faiths.
I see, I see. Well, I'm sure that was just an isolated incident there as well, right?
George, I was also struck by President Obama's statement this week about the terror attack in Kenya.
In Kenya, you remember those students who were massacred, these Christian students who were massacred. Barack Obama had a statement about the massacre of those Christians who were massacred because they were Christians.
Let's put this up on the screen. He condemned a terror attack, quote, where innocent men and women were brazenly and brutally massacred. He never once mentioned the fact that it was Christians who were deliberately targeted.
Yes, these innocent people were guilty in the eyes of their killers of being Christians. But this is of a piece with the administration's mincing vocabulary as it kind of tiptoes on eggshells to avoid saying that there is a religious, irreducibly religious dimension to this conflict. They've tried to avoid this, but the facts keep rearing their ugly heads.
We have to understand, an attack on one faith is an attack on all our faiths.
So, an attack on people because they were Christians is an attack on all of our faiths, but Barack Obama didn't say that in reference to the Christians being slaughtered. Did he? No. Can you imagine Barack Obama getting up before this country? This would take somebody with a moral character. This would take somebody with an idea of fairness somewhere in their soul and their mind. But can you imagine him standing up before the country and saying, look, these Christians who have been slaughtered across the country, because we've had Christians beheaded here in the United States, honor killings. Well, those are Muslim on Muslim most of the time. But remember that woman who was beheaded by a Muslim? Or was it Oklahoma? But, you know, not so much here in this country, but as around the world. But, you know, those things do happen here in the United States, too. Can you imagine Barack Obama stepping up to the podium and saying, well, an attack on Christianity is an attack on all of our faiths? Has he ever done anything like that? Has he ever done that? And has he ever said, look, there are these Christians being burned alive in cages and being beheaded on beaches across the globe by radical Muslims. An attack on Christians is an attack on every faith. Did he do that from his White House perch? No. No, he didn't. The only time he does that is when he's defending another faith, exclusively the Muslim faith, as Barack Obama has appointed himself the spokesman for one religion, and that is Islam.
We have to understand, an attack on one faith is an attack on all our faiths. And when any religious group is targeted, we all have a responsibility to speak up.
Yes, unless it's a Christian who is being slaughtered, correct, Mr. Obama? unless it is a Jew being slaughtered. Isn't that correct, Mr. Obama? Because you didn't take to a podium when these horrors happen on a daily basis under attack from another faith or representatives of another faith from Islam. No, you can't be brought to wag your finger at those who are radical Islamic fundamentalist terrorists and urge those individuals who are so-called moderate Muslims. You can't be brought to say, look, an attack on these Christians is an attack on every faith. No, you don't do that, do you, Barack Obama? No. Resident Obama does that only for one faith, and there's a good reason for it, folks. And it goes right back to what Bill Maher said. He wishes that liberals were as hard on Islam as they are on Christians. And I would rationalize on Jews as well. There's a reason why they do this, folks. There's a reason why for the double standard. And I think we touched on this last week, that liberals view Christianity and its principles and its precepts as obstacles to what they want to do. It's a whole inspiration for liberty and freedom thing. And they realize that that has informed our Constitution and our way of life. And they see a certain segment of the Muslim population as allies with them in destroying that way of life. And that's why I believe liberals do this. Back in a minute. Ted Cruz wins Iowa and nobody cares. Back in a minute.
You're listening to The Chris Salcedo Show.
Part of Generation Blaze. On the Blaze Radio Network.
Salcedo.
So who was the bravest candidate in the Iowa caucuses? The answer is in tonight's last word, ethanol. It is always the most important word in Iowa caucus campaigns. It is the one thing that all the candidates, Democrat and Republican, socialists and the ones who don't admit that they are socialist, agree on. Ethanol. They all agree that we should preserve the federal government's socialistic subsidy for corn growers and ethanol processors in Iowa. All of the ethanol processing plants in Iowa are owned and operated by very rich people and corporations. Many of the corn growers in Iowa are very rich people and very rich corporations. They are all living on a government handout. Ethanol is used as an additive in gasoline. Ethanol is the least efficient energy source on the planet. It takes more than a gallon of gasoline to produce a gallon of ethanol. Ethanol doesn't reduce our consumption of fossil fuels. It increases our consumption of fossil fuels. You can't be a good environmentalist or a good capitalist and be in favor of ethanol. But Hillary Clinton wouldn't dare oppose it because she wanted to win the Iowa caucuses. And good socialist and good environmentalist Bernie Sanders supports this particular piece of very bad socialism and bad environmental policy because he wanted to win the Iowa caucuses. Republican presidential candidates don't pretend to be good environmentalists, but they do pretend to be capitalists. And they support ethanol socialism, all in the hope of winning the Iowa caucuses. But last night, history was made in Iowa when, for the first time ever, an opponent of ethanol socialism won the Iowa caucus.
His name was Ted Cruz. But that wasn't the first for Mr. Cruz. And we will detail that with my next guest, Ruben Navarrete Jr., the most read Latino nationally syndicated columnist, contributor to FoxNews.com, offers his analysis and commentary on various TV networks, and is a valued pal of mine. You can catch his articles all over this great country, in cities near you, and on the web across the world. Ruben Navarrete Jr., welcome back to the Salcedo Show.
Hey, great to be with you, my friend. No matter what else happens today, Chris, we're going to get back to a phrase, and I'm going to say this phrase at some point. I fault Ted. It is Ted's fault. And we're going to get to that point at some point, and you'll know when the bells go off.
Okay.
But as much as I like, admire, and have known Ted for a dozen years, and I'm so proud of him for winning Iowa, there is something that's gone on in the last few days or so that is very much Ted's fault.
Okay, well, we'll get to that here in due course. But you've got here, you have a man with courage of his convictions to stand up, be very conservative and buck the tide, and went up against the crony capitalist GOP governor of Iowa, and
that's right. Decided
that you know what? No, I'm going to stand on principle here, and he was rewarded with a win. But there's also something the Brian Williams press is not talking about very much. As the first time in American history, a Latino has won the Iowa caucuses. Weigh in on this, if you will, please. The bias of the press.
Well, hey, now we've arrived at that point. It is Ted's fault. I love it. There goes the bells. It didn't take
ding,
long.
Ding, ding, ding.
Here's the thing. We all decide to make choices, decisions about what to emphasize, whether we be a radio talk show host, in my case, a columnist, or a presidential candidate. And I have realized, as much as I fault, I give 99% of the fault, I think, to a liberal media that does not feel comfortable with Chris Salcedo, Ruben Navarrete, the Ted Cruz, other people who may have some conservative beliefs and who don't fit their idea of a cookie cutter and what it means to be a real, authentic Latino. That's 99% of the blame. But the other 1% of the blame I give to my friend Ted Cruz, because Ted has made a decision in the 12 years that I've known him to not emphasize that part of his character enough. He is proud to be Latino. He is proud of his father, that Cuban-American story, the son of an immigrant story. That is very much a part of Ted Cruz. But liberals don't understand that, and so they define him. If you don't define yourself, your enemy defines you. So they have, in a very malicious way, defined him as not being proud of being Hispanic. And so they are denying him this victory because they do not consider him legitimate. That is not all the fault of the evil liberals in the media. It's also the fault of Ted because he let them do it.
Well, let me push back a little bit on this because, and I would say I would 99% agree with you, but I think it's 100% the fault of the Brian Williams press, and here's why. Barack Obama ran his entire campaign for political office never once emphasizing or very, very little, never emphasizing his blackness, if you will. And the Brian Williams press carried that water for him because he's an extremist liberal who believes like they do. So he didn't run on his. Remember when Jesse Jackson said he wanted to cut his manhood off? Because because he wasn't carrying the mantra. But nobody held that against him. We still had the first black president winning the Oval Office, and the Brian Williams press reported it day and night.
I'm so glad you said that, Chris, because you're right. And to really bear down on it, when Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton and others went after Barack Obama, this was before he won Iowa, there was a sense before he won Iowa that he was going to be a spoiler, he didn't have a chance to win anything, and they were all the black establishment in this country, Democrats, all went for Hillary Clinton. And they were trying to justify the fact that they were coming out against an African-American candidate named Barack Obama. And they said he did not have a civil rights consciousness. They said because he had been raised in Hawaii and he didn't have a civil rights consciousness. Michelle Obama did. He didn't. They used it to justify the fact they were with Hillary, right? So you're right that the press gave him a pass on that. When he wanted to be ethnic and be black, they let him be black. When he wanted to be white, they let him be white. He's multiracial. He's one of each. So he was able to play any card he wanted to. But a better example is Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney was cautioned by his advisors at the very beginning to not emphasize the fact that he was a Mormon, okay? Because there's an instinctual fear of African-Americans, women candidates, Mormons, and Hispanic kids named Cruz. So some really smart Yale guys, Harvard guys, got together around Mitt Romney and said, no matter what you do, Governor, don't emphasize the fact you're a Mormon. The only time he ever made reference to the fact that he was stupid, but stupid people say stupid things and politicians believe them. The only time he came around to it was during his speech at the convention when he told us all that on Sundays his family used to root for the Detroit Lions and they were Mormons, right? And I'm thinking to myself, where have you been, pal? This was always a card you didn't have to run away from this part of your character. But Chris, this is what politicians do, Republican or Democrat. If they have some part of their characteristic, and some element of their bio that is different that makes people uncomfortable, they will downplay it. And you can't come back later. You can't come back later as Mitt Romney and say, "Well, you didn't know I was Mormon." Yeah, because you never told us.
No, I actually think you're actually proving my point here, which is Let's just go with your analysis or your hypothesis and take it at face value that politicians do this. They de-emphasize things they don't think is a positive or works well for them. That's all well and good, but we were never short of information that Barack Obama was going to be the first black president. That was thrown in our face. He tried to downplay it, but it was still out there because it benefited him. When you're a Republican or a conservative like Ted Cruz, the Brian Williams press will treat you differently. Listen, and this is an indictment on the bias of the liberal extremist press, but and I'm sick and tired of it.
You're a smart guy, and I've known you a long time, Chris. You need to expand your mind beyond that point. What you say is not wrong. It's not wrong. But there's another element to it, and that is that when the media wanted to make Barack Obama black, they made him black. But when they didn't want to make him black, guess what they said? They said he was post-racial. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember.
Post-racial,
I do.
Right?
I do.
So the evil liberal media press, and I'm not arguing with you on that point. They wanted to have it both ways. So on days that they wanted to emphasize that he was black, they said, well, he's black. But on days that they wanted to emphasize that he wasn't black, like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, who couldn't get elected president, they said, well, he's post-racial. So
yeah,
that proves my point.
Here's where I think you're accurate, because I had a conversation with, by the way, Ruben Navarrete Jr. is my guest right now here on the Chris Salcedo Show. We had a conversation with Congressman Meadows from North Carolina here earlier, and I said, you know, Donald Trump is putting on a clinic here on how to use the Brian Williams press to advance his campaign and get his message out. It's a lesson that Republicans have failed to learn. And maybe this lends a little credence to what you're saying here is that, you know, and I think Ted Cruz is better at it than Mitch McConnell, certainly, or John McCain or anybody else in that stripe. But they have not learned how to play this game with the Brian Williams press and to get their message across.
Yes.
And maybe that's the lesson.
That's right. And there's a lot that we can learn from the way Trump handles the press, like a master. It's true. But I told you, we talked about this 6 months ago, you and I, that at some point in time, conservatives who listen to The Blaze, who listen to Chris Salcedo, are going to have to make a choice. They're going to have to choose between Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. This BS about, well, we like both, I like both, I like both. No, they have made you choose now because they are going after each other's throats. And so it's going to have to be one or the other. And
Wait a minute. Well, Trump pulled back the last couple of days. Have you noticed that? He is pulling way back on that.
It doesn't matter if they pull back or not. At some point, you only get to check one box on your ballot.
That's true.
You only get to choose one. And so you're going to have to pick one. And they both know that. But you know what made me really nervous this week, Chris? And it really makes me look at Cruz more favorably than Trump. When Jimmy Carter made his comments in London. When Jimmy Carter said, and I this is really important, when Jimmy Carter said that he would support Donald Trump over Ted Cruz because, and this is key, because he thought Trump was more malleable, because Trump, he says, doesn't have any core convictions other than it's all about Trump. He goes, Ted Cruz, according to Jimmy Carter, is a right-wing ideologue who is very rigid and can't be rolled and can't be reasoned with, can't be changed by liberals, right? To my mind, two things. That is not just a ringing endorsement for Ted Cruz, in my mind.
Yeah.
But there's something else to it. It's something else to this. And that is that I now understand why liberals in the press have spent the last 3 days hating on Ted Cruz in a way that they've never hated on Donald Trump. I finally get it. Liberals in the press, they all live in New York next to Trump. They're all his neighbors. He's one of them. New York values, they have New York values.
Uh-huh.
So I have seen, and pay attention to this, I have seen people interview Donald Trump, be it on any network, and they refer to him as Donald. They never call Ted. It's always Senator Cruz, right?
Yep.
They don't
yep.
say Mr. Trump. They say Donald. So for the first time, I'm very suspicious of Trump, and I'm suspicious of Trump because he is, I believe Jimmy Carter's right, he is much more malleable. He doesn't have core beliefs, and this is why the liberal press hates Ted Cruz today.
Ruben Navarrete Jr., everybody. He is the most read Latino nationally syndicated columnist, contributor over there at FoxNews.com. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Bless you, my brother. Take care.
Talk to you later. More to come on the other side of the break. We'll put a wrap on our show today on the Blaze Radio Network. Stick with me.
He is a liberty-loving Latino conservative.
Need we say more?
The Chris Salcedo Show. Only on the Blaze Radio Network.
Chris Salcedo is on
the Blaze Radio Network.
Thought we'd end the program before we check in with Slater, if we can get him hooked up here. A little bit of a outlook on the economy. This was, I got into it with a listener this week about, you know, what was more important to Americans, the economy or national security. And I thought it was teetering between the both of them, but Iowans, very much the economy was on their mind. Here's Brett Baer at the Fox News Channel.
Listen, we're talking economy, and we just had the Iowa entrance polls, and we have some info. The Dem side, the top issue, 30% economy and jobs, and there you see healthcare at 30%. On the Republican side, the top issue, government spending, 32%. The economy, jobs, 27%. All the talk about terrorism and national security, it's jobs. Yeah. And the economy that are driving this.
Yeah, and Obama did a victory lap yesterday, took a swipe at Republicans because of a 4.9% unemployment rate, which is, we said earlier on the program, it is dropping by a mechanism of folks not being counted anymore by their government. It doesn't mean they have jobs. And of those who have jobs, they have multiple jobs. And each one of those jobs is counted as a job. So if you're one person who works three part-time jobs, guess what? In the Obama economy, that's three jobs. Three jobs created, even though you're working all three. And the median income did spike. It went up. But that's the first time, I think literally it's the first time that's happened in the entire occupation of the Oval Office from Barack Obama. The reality is this.
Is there a sense that this Obama economy is not going to be a plus for Hillary Clinton or, let's say, Bernie Sanders once you get to the end of this race?
Yeah, I mean, she's got to overcome that. I mean, if we were growing at 7% or 8%, she could say, look, we've had all this growth, but our economy is barely growing at all. I mean, we just saw the last print on overall economic growth for the last 3 months of the year, 0.7%, 0.7%. Percent, Brett. That's nothing. I mean, we're skating very close to a potential recession. So how is she going to come in and say, look, I can do more good when it comes to the economy?
Trish Regan there having a conversation with Brett Baer. 0.7% the last quarter of last year. Folks, before you start getting all dispirited, I just want about, oh my gosh, Obama, it's working. No, it's not. None of it is working. It's all false. They've utilized your taxpayer money. The Fed has utilized your taxpayer money to give a false impression of a recovery. Barack Obama, as Ted Cruz has pointed out, ladies and gentlemen, has never seen one quarter of growth that is above 3%. He's the first occupier of the Oval Office to ever, well, I can't say accomplish that, where that has ever been afflicted on the United States to do that. Nobody's ever been that lackluster, and Barack Obama has achieved it. Okay? So, look, I know that the Brian Williams press is trumpeting all of this stuff, but just guard yourself, because the fundamentals, the reality on the ground economically, hell, you're all living it. You all know what I'm talking about. All right, that's going to do it, everybody, for the Salcedo Show. If you're so inclined, catch up with me during the week, will you please? On Facebook, The Chris Salcedo Show, at Chris Salcedo TX on Twitter. Remember, society's worth not measured by how much power is seized by a government, but rather how much power is reserved for the people.
On the Blaze Radio Network.